Any questions?
I'll just quickly go over it again. My comments to your answers are online. Comments to everybody's answers are online. The first question, a lot of people were confused about what I was asking for and essentially blew it because they didn't understand what the question was asking for. But the question explicitly said, don't even bother worrying about how the stack is implemented. And then people started writing about how the stack was implemented. And there's really not much you can do if the question tells you not to do something and then you immediately start to do it in the answer. The second question I don't really understand. A lot of people got it wrong because they said that the average statement, the statement that computes the average, is part of the loop. And that's wrong for two reasons. First of all, someone actually asked me this question and I said it is a separate statement. It is after the loop. It is not part of the loop. But let's suppose that you didn't understand what I was saying or you didn't hear me. The question asks, how much time does it take for the average computation to execute? So I'm saying, looking at that statement, what's the estimate for its execution time, which is independent of whether or not it's in a loop. Doesn't matter. I didn't ask you how many times it's executed. I asked you when it gets executed, how much time does it take? That's another example of not really understanding what the question is saying. Also, a lot of people, or not a lot, but certainly more than should have been, essentially ignored almost the entire question. And they looked at average and they said, oh, that executes in constant time. And that essentially ignores the other half of the question. And when you do that, you should ask yourself, is the other half of the question really irrelevant to my answer? Right? Because, it may very well be that I'm incompetent and I don't know how to ask questions. Certainly possible. But if that's the case, you want to make sure that the part that you're ignoring is actually the irrelevant part. Of course, it may not be the case. It may, in fact, be that I ask reasonably competent questions, and the first half of the question is, in fact, important for the answer. But if you're going to ignore parts of the question, you should at least go through the mental exercise of asking yourself, is it really irrelevant? It has nothing to do with the answer? And if the answer is yes, then go ahead. But those people either didn't do it, or they came up with the wrong answer, and again, there's not much you can do about that. People should have cleaned up on the third question. But they didn't. They left a lot of points on the table because I really couldn't figure out what they were talking about. They had the right words, which is kind of what I was looking for. They didn't have them in the right order, or at least if they did, I couldn't figure it out. So the third question was one that I think a lot of people lost more points than they should have. But most people had the right direction, so. And the fourth question was, that's the closest I ever get to an essay question. One of the things I talked about when I talked about the first quiz, I said, it's a really good idea to look at the question and figure out what the important words are. But I didn't really say what the important words are. I didn't tell you how to figure out what the important words are. Right, so I'll do that now. Anybody have any clues as to how you might figure out what the important words are in a question? Well, I guess I know the answer to that. It's no, because no one seemed to do it very well. But certainly, it's a real good guess that any word that you've been hearing repeatedly over the previous section can be considered to be an important word or phrase. So that's a good way to figure out what the important words in a question are. Just look at the question and say, has he been saying this word over and over and over again during the past section? If so, that's probably an important word or phrase, and it's something that you should at least be aware of when you answer the question, if not actually have that phrase or word in your answer. And the reason I mention that is, what's the point of the fourth question? I'll admit, it's a weird question. It's the kind of question I like, too, unfortunately. What was the point of the fourth question? Why did I ask that? Maybe I am incompetent. Why did I ask that question? What was the point? And I'll admit, perhaps that was my mistake. I did say that you were an expert in doing algorithm analysis, and a couple of people actually said algorithm analysis. And I'll admit that maybe I made that mistake, but that actually wasn't my intention. My intention was not to have you come up with an algorithm, but it was to have you come up with an estimate. The point of the fourth question is to think about asymptotic estimates, right? And I left lots of clues in this admittedly very large question, but the fact that you're talking about canvas, which is a two-dimensional surface, and blocks of stone, which are three dimensions. So there's a difference in power there. There's sort of units squared and units cubed. Right, this unrealistic assumption about unit costs being the same, that was another clue. That one's kind of obscure, but that was another clue. And there was a big one, too. Oh, assuming that the sculptors and painters turn out approximately the same number of works. A lot of people gave me a lot of really, you know, they worked really hard to sort of fit this question into a framework, but they, I don't think anybody got the appropriate point of view on this, which is like, hey, if you buy canvas, you're paying by the square foot. Your cost goes up as the square of the dimension. If you're buying stone, you're buying things by the cubic foot. Your costs go up by the cube. So which costs you more if the unit costs are the same? A square foot of canvas, or, no, that's not correct, a painting that is N by N, or a sculpture that is N by N by N? Which costs more? Why? It's cube. That's exactly the point I was trying to get across. If you're paying per unit the same, but you are paying a cube of the dimensions versus a square of the dimensions, you're paying more. And that's not fair. Well, if you assume fair, I mean evenly divided cost. That was the entire point of the question. Right? And that is completely consistent with everything we talked about for this section. So that was the point of the fourth one. Now, I'll certainly give you that this question was a little obscure. It didn't come right out and say, do this. But, like I said, these are the kinds of questions I like. Because these are the kinds of questions that can show you, or show me anyway, that you really understood what I was talking about. Okay? And unfortunately for you, these are the kinds of questions I like to come up with, and you can expect to see questions like that on successive tests. Any questions? I owe you the third programming assignment. I took a look at it the other day, and I realized that I have somehow managed to... Oh, man. I somehow managed to hork it up, and I need to fix it. So your third assignment is not out yet, and I will let you know when it is out, and I will suitably adjust the due date when I do that. I really hope to have it out. Actually, I hope to have it out yesterday, but I did grading instead, and I wasn't able to get to it today, so I hope to have it out by tomorrow, but I'll let you know. Monday at 5 o'clock is the last time you can drop this class with having a W on your transcript. There are some people who have not turned in any assignments. These people need to drop the class. They're not going to pass. I will be sending these people email. Of course, they don't have to drop if they don't want to. I don't know that I'm talking to anybody in class. I don't think so. I'm talking to anybody in class in that situation, but if you talk to your friends, you might want to mention this. I'll be sending emails specifically to the individuals who really need to drop this class because they're not going to pass it. And again, if you have any questions about that, you should come and talk to me. Although, at least in the case of not doing the assignments, it's pretty straightforward. And I believe that's all the business I have to conduct. Any questions? All right, I'm going to have to perhaps reboot again, since this doesn't look right. We will continue our discussion of trees. I started off by going over some motivation, which is essentially the same motivation that we've been having. If you listen carefully on the podcast, this is what it sounds like to take your sweater off. Oh, that's going to be a problem, I'll bet, but we'll see. I started off by motivating trees, and I did that by looking at the same thing we've been looking at all semester, which is linked lists and arrays and figuring out what kind of properties they have, what kind of properties we would like them to have, and how can we go from what they have to what we'd like them to have. And in this case, we took a look at the fact that the only actually part that we have left in our linked list that we haven't dealt with is the great middle. The fact that it cost us linear time to get anywhere in the middle of the array as opposed to the ends, where we get constant time. And we wanted to somehow fix that. We wanted to get better performance to access in the middle of the linked list. We fiddled around a bit and discovered that, well, you know, the reason that we can get constant access to the ends is because we have references to the ends. So if we have references to the middle of the list, then quite possibly we can get better performance in the middle of the list. And that turned out to be the case. I mentioned briefly that there's a data structure that uses that observation as a basis for providing a different kind of tree, a tree that we're not going to talk about, which are known as finger trees. But what we are doing instead is we are essentially storing references to halves, repeatedly storing references to halves of the tree, to halves of the linked list, and when you do that, you get a structure that is known as a tree. We'll have actually several definitions of trees, one of which we'll talk about further on tonight. Because this has a hierarchical structure, the improvement that we're going to get is not constant. We have to chase pointers. But if we are clever in the way in which we divide our list up into trees, we can get a logarithmic improvement, which is better than linear. The resulting structure, that hierarchical structure from a linked list, is known as a tree, and there's lots of terminology associated with a tree. This is some of it. This is more of it. This page points out that trees rely heavily on genealogical relationships to describe, for example, the positioning of nodes relative to one another. Having identified trees as a data structure, we can now think about packaging them up in a linked list, packaging them up in an abstract data type. The properties associated with that abstract data type are pretty much the same properties that we've been talking about all along. However, unlike most of the linked list-based data structures, stacks, queues, and so forth, it actually makes sense to talk about traversals. And in fact, it is a lot more interesting to talk about traversals in trees, which we'll see again later on tonight. The usual stuff. Although, again, given the diversity of the diversity of choices we have when traversing a tree, the navigation operations are going to be significantly more complicated, but certainly a lot more interesting to implement than the navigation choices you have on linked lists. And I believe it was at this point I decided to bail. Is that right? Any questions about anything we talked about up to this point? All right, so how do we implement these tree things? You have two choices, as always. You can implement them statically or dynamically, just as we did every other data structure that we talked about in this class. Static implementation involves arrays, and the dynamic implementation involves dynamic storage, as is usually the case. Similar to stacks and circular buffers, an array implementation of a tree, even though it's not dynamic, actually makes a lot of sense. And we will cover this in a lot greater detail in a lecture, I think next week sometime, when we talk about heaps. But for now, we're just going to concentrate, for the most part, on dynamic implementations. Much like the linked list, the dynamic implementation of a tree is similar. We have some member fields that maintain internal information. In particular, we have a pointer to the root of the tree, should the tree have a root, and then we may have some auxiliary data keeping information, like how many nodes are in the tree, so we have a constant time size operation. There could be other fields that keep other information. For example, when we talk about implementing iterators or traversers through the tree, we'll have extra fields here, but for now, that's all we need. Similar to the linked list, we're going to need an auxiliary data structure encapsulated within the ADT to keep track of the individual parts of our data structure. In the case of a linked list, those were the links. And in the case of trees, it's the nodes. So in a sense, you can think of the tree node as an extension to the linked list link. In the tree node, you can have lots of different kinds of information. Certainly, you're going to have something for the data. You're going to store data in every node. There are trees in which you only store data in the leaves. Those are very important trees. They're known as B trees, and we're not going to talk about those. I've already asked you, and I don't remember the answer. Is anybody taking data structures? Databases. Okay, well, they may actually talk about B trees and databases, and that's essentially what databases are. They're hopped up versions of B trees. We're not going to talk about them at all, except to point out that they store information in the leaves only, whereas we're going to talk about trees that store information in every node. In addition, you're going to have references to children. Depending upon the arity of the tree, you're going to have so many references for the children. And then you can have other stuff. You could have, for example, a pointer back to the parent. This turns out to be useful, as you will see, when we go through the algorithms that you might want to apply to trees. You could do, for example, free lists. If you remember when we talked about linked lists, I said that, surprisingly, using a free list to hang on to nodes that are no longer needed turns out to be a relatively important optimization in terms of performance. Well, you may want to do a similar thing here. You can do all kinds of things, but certainly you're going to need data and children and perhaps other things as you wish. It's a question of style, but again, in a lot of people's opinions, including mine, it's best to maintain the tree node as an internal data structure that is inaccessible outside the tree. Here's an example of a tree instance. In this case, I've gotten rid of the tree node part, but we have a pointer to the root, and then we have nodes, seven of them, in our tree. Notice that in this case, I'm drawing the arcs between the nodes or the edges between the nodes as double arrowheads to indicate that we have both a pointer down to the children and each child has a pointer back to the parent. Generally speaking, I'll not do this, but I did it here because of the explicit mention of the parent pointer. I'm not going to... Yes, sorry.
Does the dot in the square mean that it's a pointer?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, that's what that means. It's like if I took the dot away, you wouldn't know what this arrow meant, so I put the dot in there too. Yes, that's true. That's true, too. These indicate... Well, actually, I should have a dot here, too, I suppose. But those could be integers, so maybe that doesn't get a dot. Yeah, that's what that means. We actually take a look at the part that you build the tree from. Not too difficult. It's generic. In fact, you probably wouldn't even use this because the tree itself would be generic, and you would just use the type parameter from the tree declaration here, but So this is a binary tree ADT that's generic, and then you define internally the node that contains a reference to the value, which is also generic, but it's not generic in and of itself. It's off the type parameter. This is a binary tree because it has two children. It's an n-ary tree, a two-ary tree. If you're going to have an n-ary tree, it's going to be slightly different. You don't get to actually call your children individually. Well, I suppose you could, but what you'd more likely do is have an array of children. Because what you will do, most likely, is make n a parameter to the tree creation. So when you create the tree, you can say, I would like to have a tree that can have at most n children, in which case you don't know what n is going to be until you create the individual tree instances. In this case, you know that you're going to have two. So you would have, you can call them left or right or whatever you'd like. But in this is the general case. And you know, I've left out the parents and all the other things, but if you're interested in those, you can put them in. In fact, that would be a good exercise to put them in. I mentioned that the earlier definition was one way to define a tree, and now we're going to talk about another way to define a tree, a particularly important way to define a tree, and that's with the notion of a recursive definition, or recursive data structure. Trees are interesting also because they represent the first non-trivial recursive data structure we've seen in this class. All the data structures we've seen are somehow recursive. Right? Linked lists, stacks, queues, they're all recursive in some sense, and we can come back to this and think about how they would be. Well, so are trees. But the difference is the previous data structures, arrays, linked lists, and so forth, are trivially recursive, essentially because they're linear. Trees, on the other hand, are nonlinear. They're a hierarchical relationship. So in that sense, the recursion is non-trivial, which is what makes it interesting. So what's the recursive definition of, in this case, a binary tree? A binary tree is either empty, that is, it contains no nodes whatsoever, or it contains a node, which is known as the root, and two trees, which are called left and right, which are the children. And that's a tree. Why is this recursive? Why is this definition recursive? Why am I calling it recursive and saying, ooh, it's really interesting? Ah, well, that's the question. Well, just from real life, what does recursive mean? Don't know? Anybody know what recursive means? Well, all right, let me retract that question and ask another question. What is interesting about this definition? It actually contains what seems to be a really big mistake if you've listened to English teachers or perhaps teachers of rhetoric, depending upon what kind of rhetoric they teach. This definition should cause problems. And what might those problems, what might a particular problem be? That's fine. All right, let's talk about that. So what you're saying is a tree can be just a root by this definition. And the question is that all right? How can that be? How can I have just a root?
Well, you can't. It says it has a node and two trees left and right. So
right.
You can't just have a root by that definition.
So you're saying you can't just have a root?
Yeah.
Okay. Anybody have any other comments? I will argue that, in fact, you can just have a root. Now we have to figure out which one of us is right. Well, let's see if it fits the definition. We have a node, and it has two trees, but, in fact, it doesn't have two trees. So is that possible? Is it possible for a node to have what we're calling two trees, but yet not have any trees at all? Exactly. What's a tree? Well, a tree is something that is either empty or it has a node and two children, subtrees. So, in fact, you can have just a node and have that be a tree, because its subtrees would be empty. So that is possible. And that also indicates why this is a recursive definition. The thing that should bother you, if you're an English teacher, is I am using the term I am defining in the definition. I am defining a tree, but I'm defining a tree in terms of a tree. Generally speaking, when you're writing definitions, if you're a lexicographer or something like that, writing a dictionary, that is a mistake. You need to define a term in different terms. But here, I'm defining a term with itself. That's why this is recursive. Because I'm saying, oh, you want to know what a tree is? Look for a node and look for two subtrees. Well, what's subtrees? Well, we know what that is. It's either nothing or look for a node and two subtrees. So you just keep spinning around and around and around. What saves us? Why don't we just keep going around in a circle like a dog chasing its tail? What saves us from doing that? When do we stop? Right, but when does that occur?
At the data.
Relative to our definition, when does that situation occur? When do we stop?
When it doesn't have two trees associated with it.
Right, that's true, but when is that, can you justify that possibility ever occurring? Maybe that possibility doesn't occur. In which case, we will, in fact, chase our tail forever.
Is it because it builds up?
No, there's no need to go to direction. Just look at the definition. Look, the definition is what I'm asking you about.
When the subtrees are empty?
Exactly. This stops us when we're tired. Because at this point, we're done. Right? No tree. We're done. Right? This is known as the base case. This is the thing that stops us. This is the thing that keeps us from spinning off into infinity. Right, this is what's known as the recursive step, because it contains the definition of what we are talking about in the definition of what we are talking about. But fortunately, we have the base case to stop us. Does anybody have any questions about that? That turns out to be extremely important for reasons that we will discuss in just a few minutes. The recursive definition of N-ary trees is similar. You just extend the recursive step appropriately. So now that we have recursion available to us, we don't actually need to use recursion. One of the reasons recursion is important is because it gives us very nice, straightforward tree-based algorithms. If you're not going to write recursive algorithms, you're going to be spending a lot more time writing your algorithms to deal with trees. The operations, in particular the manipulation operations, although we also have a few query operations on here too, are the ones that we've been talking about all along. Put things in, take things out, see if things are in the tree. There are other operations that we'll be talking about later on today. But the important thing about these operations is our expectation as to their worst case performance should be log n. That's the reason we are pursuing this data structure. We want to be able to access data more efficiently than we could if we had linear access. So we want to get asymptotically better times on our operations, and the asymptotically better bound that have our heart set on is logarithmic. So you might want to, as we go along, ask yourself, is this going to give us logarithmic behavior? Is this operation going to execute in at most logarithmic steps? So let's do the simplest. How would I look for a value in a tree? And I'll be drawing binary trees here because they're easiest, but the point is this applies to N-ary trees in general. You just have to make slight extensions. How would I look for a value in a binary tree? Just sort of think about the problem. How would you solve it?
Start at the top and shift down.
Okay. So tell me how to do that. That's right. Sure.
Go to the root.
Okay.
Right,
exactly. So you just, if you're looking for a particular value, the only part of the tree that you have immediate access to is the root. Because in your ADT, you have a pointer to the root. If you have a finger tree, then you may have other nodes that you can access directly. But since we're not talking about those, it's the only thing you can get to is the root. So that's where you got to go. And you go to the root, and you look at the root value and say, is that what I'm looking for? And it either is or isn't. And if it is, you win. You're done. But what if it's not? What do you do then? Well, you have children, some number of them, in this case two. And those children are what? They're trees. So you ask yourself the question again. Is the value I'm looking for in this tree? And if it is, you're done. Otherwise, is the value I'm looking for in the other tree? And that gives you the final answer. And notice that what we are doing here is exploiting the recursive structure of a tree. Of course, there's actually one small adjustment that you have to make to your algorithm that you told us. And what is that? Yeah. Or anybody, but you. One small problem with your algorithm. What was it? Yes, that's true. That's true. But the problem is actually on the other end. What's the definition of a tree? Right. Exactly. Problem is, you assume that the root exists. But remember what the definition of a tree is. It's either nothing or it's the root with two subtrees. So you have to be careful about that. So this is the code for doing a find or member function. You accept the value you're looking for and a pointer to the root. And then if the root is, again, if the tree is empty, you're not going to find it, so you return false. Otherwise, you have a root, you check the data. If you found it, you return true. Otherwise, you haven't found it, now you have to continue the search. And the only thing you have left to look at are two trees. But fortunately, we know how to search trees, right? We just call member with the value we're looking for and the root of the tree we want to search. Well, the tree we want to search is the left child. So we just recursively call root dot left to search for E. If we find it there, we're done. Otherwise, we have to search the right tree, right subtree, which again is a recursive call. Call root.right with E. That's it. We're done. Now, you might want to think about writing this without making recursive calls. I recommend you do it. It's a good exercise. Yes?
If that executes, won't that just keep following to, like, to the left, though? Because as long as something exists, it's going to check to see if that one's the answer, and if it's not, then it's going to go to root.left, and then it's going to check that one with the answer. And if that
doesn't kill,
it's going to go to root.left.
I don't know. Let's find out. All right. And let's just pretend that there are values there, which we're not going to find. So I'm looking for X. What do I do? Okay. Which is this.
Make sure there is a root.
Right. Okay. We'll skip that part.
Okay. Then it's going to see if the root is the answer.
Right. Okay, so it goes to the left. So that's at least, oh, I can use colors. Well, it's, yeah, let's use colors. Oh, now I got to pick a color. Let's use orange. So now I go down here.
Yeah. I'm just going to check to see if that's the answer. And if it's not, then it's going to go to the left again.
Okay. And now what happens?
Then it's going to check to see if that's the answer. But if it's not, it'll try to go to the left, but there is no left.
Well, all right. Let's apply a little bit more care. So we are at this point, and we come in here. Root is not nil. All right.
Oh, okay. So I go left, but left is empty.
Exactly, exactly. But let's just go through it. So we actually have a root, which is the leaf node, and we compare the data to, in this case, X. It's not in the tree, so we're going to not going to return true, so we're going to go down to the next. We're going to then go and call member again on root.left. But what's root.left? It's empty. So we call root.left on empty. So we're back up here again. We execute this test. What does it do? It returns false immediately because root is nil.
And then right.
Exactly. And then what happens is we unwind. So let's see. So let's just complete it. So it calls member. And let me just draw something that looks like that to emphasize those are nil pointers. I don't know if you're familiar with that notation, but those are nil pointers. So we call member with X and nil. That essentially fails. That returns false. So we go down here and return member with X and nil again. That's going to be false again. So we're going to return, at this point, we're going to return false. All right. Now, where does that return to?
Return member right.
Exactly. It goes up back up to here now. And we were executing this. Because at this node, we said, oh, the value at this node is not X, so let's look at the left tree, left subtree. We just got done looking at the left subtree and failed. So at this point, this is going to return false. We're not going to return true in that case. We are going to continue on and call member with x and root.write. So we're going to go down this way to that node and then turn the crank again. So we're going to come in here. We're actually going to have a node, so this does nothing. We're going to look at the data at that root, and there's no match there. And we're going to go down the left and the right subtrees.
So essentially, it's going to search the entire left side of the tree before it goes to the right.
Exactly.
But if it's all the way at the right, on the bottom right, won't it be linear behavior? It's going to search through every element.
Ah, well, you hold on to that question. I'm going to ask it later on tonight. But let's just hear your argument anyway, in case I forget or we run out of time. Or
it's going to go to the right, then it's going to search to the left. It's going to find that that's empty. If that's not it, then it's going to see that below that is empty, so it's going to go to the right again.
Give me a simpler explanation. You're right, but that's just...
going to search the left before the right.
Doesn't matter. What happens if I switch these? What happens if I say... So what? Does that change your observation about going all the way to the end of the tree?
Well, no, that would be as fast as possible, but if X was on the left, then it would be linear again.
Exactly. So the fact that we are looking at right first and then left, that's not relevant to your argument. Okay. Now, it will be when we go on to the next lecture, but it's not right now. Okay, so give me a crisper argument about why this is linear.
Well, it doesn't matter if it's only linear because it searches from left to right.
Well, no.
It's only on the right. No, that's just like what I was saying.
Right, exactly, and I just argued that that's really not the point.
Yeah, I don't have an argument
for
that.
Oh, come on, you sure do. Did you have one? Okay, tell us.
It touches every...
Exactly, that's the point. It touches... you need to say it. It touches every node. When it fails, it touches every node. And I guess that's all I want to say. Any questions about this? And you can begin to see, if you go back over here, why non-recursive implementations of tree operations are complicated. Right? Because you have to remember. Right? If you go down here and you fail, you have to remember where it is you need to return to so you can do something else. Right? If you use a recursive implementation, that's all taken care of for you through the magic of something we've talked about previously, through the magic of runtime stacks. But if you don't write a recursive definition, you don't have the magic of runtime stacks, and you have to do it yourself, which turns out to be a pain. Although you can do some interesting optimizations. Okay, so that's looking for something. That's a query operation. We actually are not changing the tree in any way. Now we're going to change the tree. We're going to stick a new value into the tree. And this turns out to be really simple. I have a value e I want to add to the tree. I have the root of the tree that I'm interested in. Notice that this is actually... And I suppose I should be a little bit more careful here. This is an internal operation within the ADT itself. Why is that? Why can I say that? Why is this an internal operation and not an operation at the interface? I guess I should make that clear. Let's see if anybody can figure it out. Yes. Exactly. The point is, one of the parameters to this operation is a pointer to the root. Well, you don't have a pointer to the root outside the ADT. So this has to be an internal operation, but I should be a little bit more obvious about why that's the case. So I guess I should fix this slide. I bet you I don't have my notes here. I win. All right, so what do? Simplicity itself. We create a new node that has as the value at its root, sorry, we create a new tree actually, as the value at its root, E, left subchild, the existing tree, and no right subchild. Now, is this a legal tree? Does this match our definition of what we expect a tree to be?
No.
Okay, why not?
Because either it's empty or has a root left and right.
Okay. So this is clearly not empty because there's something here. So the problem must be with the root and the left and the right. So what is the, in this, what is the root? So the picture, I guess, I could draw would be either, so a tree is either empty or a node and two children. Right, so it's clear that this is an empty. And now the question is it this? No, go ahead, Michael. Don't look at him.
No, because the right side is null.
Okay, so you're saying that...
It's the one that you just created,
right? Right. So you're saying that this is nil. Okay, but is nil acceptable? What is nil? What would nil represent?
Empty,
right, which is... Right, it's a tree. Right. So certainly saying this takes care of the fact that at least the right child is a tree, because that's empty, and empty is a tree. All right, so we have a right child that's a tree. What about the left child? Is this a tree?
Isn't that just a node?
This one?
Yeah,
it's a subtree, but the question is it? If it's legal, it's a subtree, but our question is this legal?
It is.
Okay, why?
You specified it has a root.
Exactly. What is this? It's the root. It's a tree. Okay. It is our definition of what a tree is. So this is our, so if you want, you can think of this is the old tree. We're going from an old tree, which does not contain the value of E, let's assume, to a new tree that does contain the value of E. So the left subchild of this, what we claim to be a tree, or what I claim to be a tree, is going to be our old tree. All right? Well, the only part we have left is this. And what is this? Right, it's the node itself. That's why we're calling new here. So we are creating a new tree which has a root node and then a left and a right subtree. The left subtree is the original tree, and then we don't have a right subtree, but that's okay. So this is, in fact, a tree. All right, everyone got that? Notice that even though this is not recursive in the sense of the search algorithm we talked about on the previous slide, it still uses the recursive definition to justify correctness.
So that's adding to the top of the tree?
Yes. We can do whatever we want. If you want, you can add to the bottom of the tree. But why bother? I mean, that's hard, because first of all, you have to get to the bottom. As we'll see, that's not quite as easy as it looks. And then you have to fool around. But this is the easiest thing you can do. And this has another nice advantage. What is it? It's constant time. It executes independent of the number of data items you have in the tree. Whereas if you wanted to put a new leaf in your tree, it could be, at worst, as we'll see, linear. So this is simple and fast, but you could certainly do something else if you wanted to. Thank you. Now the tough one, removing nodes. So I have some value in the tree, possibly, maybe not. Let's assume that the value is in the tree. Because if it's not, we don't have very much interesting to do. And now I want to take it out of the tree. I want to remove that data item from the tree. So this is the general picture. What do we do here? How do we deal with this? Well, this turns out to be a tricky problem. And when you're faced with a tricky problem, the easiest way to deal with it is to break it up into simple cases and then solve the individual cases and kind of hope that you see a pattern, generalize that pattern. Otherwise, you can just paste all your cases together in one big case, but then you get an ugly piece of code. So with that in mind, what is the simplest possible... Oh, actually, let's just go on. What is the simplest possible case of removing an item from the tree? Removing a data item or a datum from the tree? Okay, the leaf node. And why is that? Why is that simple? Right, it has no children, no responsibilities, which, again, is a legal tree, remember, because you can have left and right being empty. So the simplest case is I want to remove N, and N happens to be stored in a leaf node. So what do I do in that case? How do I deal with that? How do I deal with having to delete a leaf node from a tree?
Can you just make an empty node?
Right. My question is how you delete it. That's the question I want to know. In fact, I don't even have to bother with the value, right? If I'm going to delete the node, then I don't really care about the value. That's not quite true, but for our purposes, since we're talking generally, that'll be good enough. But the question is, how do you do the deletion? James? Yes, exactly. The only thing that's connecting this node to the tree is the pointer from its parent. So if I nil out this pointer, that node floats off into hyperspace and is gone. So the only thing I need to do here is to null out the parent's pointer to the node containing n, and I'm done. I've removed that node from the tree. Now, if you're keeping a free list, then you want to hang it on the free list, but that's a refinement. Okay? Now, there's an important observation to make in that operation. Although it seems like a trivial one, it turns out to be the killer. It turns out to be the thing that makes dealing with deletions and insertions to a certain extent difficult. And what is that point to observe? It also refers back to something I had mentioned earlier in this lecture when I talked about the structure of the internal nodes.
Is it because you're changing T while you're using T?
Yes, you're right, but be more precise. How am I changing T while I'm using it? What am I doing in specific? What am I doing to delete this node? How do I delete this node? Right, but the pointer, where's the pointer to it?
It's in T.
Right, but be a little more specific. Where in T? See, now you get to learn all these, now you get to use all these spiffy words that we had learned about in the last lecture. Or at least one of them, anyway. Where is the pointer to this node, n?
In the parent,
exactly. So while we are interested in getting rid of this node, n, we have to deal with n's parent. Okay. This is why sometimes you will see people put pointers in nodes back to the parent. Notice this code. Does this code really have anything to do with parents? For example, when you come in at this point, do you know what the parent of this node is? No, because there's no information, assuming that you don't actually put the parent pointer in the node itself, there's no information about what the parent of this node is. So if you need to know about the parent, you're either going to have to make that available in terms of data in the node itself, or you're going to have to pass that around as a parameter, saying this is my parent and this is the root. We didn't need to worry about that for member, because member didn't care about parents. But delete does. Delete does care, as Christina just argued. So we are going to have to figure out where the parent is. And for that, again, it could be important to either pass it around as a parameter or make it part of the node itself. So you can answer the question looking at the node where the parent is. All right, this is a very important point because this is the thing that will trip you up. All right, so that is the simplest case we have. Well, I mean, the simplest case is the value we're looking for isn't in the tree at all, so we don't have to do anything. But this is the next simplest case. The value we are looking for is a leaf node, so we can just get rid of it by nilling out the pointer to it from its parent. But there is one tricky little bit, which is, suppose it doesn't have a parent. Is that possible? Is it possible for the node n not to have a parent?
It's the root.
Yes, if it's the root. So if t is actually pointing to n, in other words, you have a tree of a single node, which we argued earlier is in fact a tree, so it is something we have to worry about, then you've got to have a special case, or maybe not. Maybe if you're clever, you can fix it up so that you don't have to special case this. But either way, you have to keep in mind that T, in fact, could be a tree consisting entirely of the node you're interested in. This is another reason why trees are interesting, because now you're starting to get to data structures that have special cases. The previous data structures we had were, they had special cases, but they were relatively straightforward. You probably didn't even think about them, and nothing bad happened. That's not going to be the case for trees. All right, so that is the second simplest. What is the next step? Let's increase the complexity and figure out how to solve that problem. So what is the next level of complexity in up from removing a leaf node?
Removing a parent node, like a node that has children.
Right. So the next step up in complexity is not removing leaf nodes, but removing what I call here almost leaf nodes. These are nodes that are not themselves leaves, but they point to leaves. So in this case, I have a tree, and I want to delete the node containing P, which we'll assume is here. And that has two children, both of which are leaves. How do I delete P? And what's the problem here? Why is this more complex than this problem? Yes?
If you just take the pointer, you're losing more than one number. You're losing the leaves and the parameters.
That's right. We can't just say, oh, well, I know how to delete this because I knew how to delete it on the previous example. So I just go back to the parent, nil out the null pointer, and I'm done. Except that you're removing, in addition to P, its children, which you don't want to remove. The only node you want to remove is the node that contains P. So we need to do something else. We need to do something more than just nil out the parent. What do we do? How can we deal with this?
Point them to the children.
Point what to the children? We're writing algorithms here, so you have to be precise.
You point the parent to the children. You're removing P. So
right.
You're taking the P's parent and pointing. Instead of
it pointing
to P, you're going to point
it
to children.
Okay, but how do I do that? All right, that sounds reasonable, right? Yeah, that sounds reasonable. But the question is, how do I do that? Thank you. I want to get rid of P, and what do you? So you're saying essentially, take this arrow, mm-hmm. and do what with it? Create another. So you're saying do this, bend it around.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And then you will have a second child for that parent. You have to add another pointer for the second child.
Okay, so let's draw the parent in here. And you're saying do what now?
That child 2's parent will be the same.
So you're saying do this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, everyone agree with that? Well, let me just make it a little more complicated. So what you're saying is, to delete P, I take this node and do this, and now what? Right, the problem here is that I only have two children. This is a binary tree. If it was an n-ary tree, you'd be on the right track. But this is a binary tree. So, and even if it was an n-ary tree, what would I do? How would I cause the same problem with an n-ary tree?
N plus 1.
Right, just have n minus 1 other children someplace. Now we're back to the same problem. The problem here is I can't draw this third arrow because I don't have three children. I only have two. Or I have n and not n plus 1 children. So that's, I mean, you're sort of on the right track, but you're going to have to approach it from a different direction. I guess I could leave this up here. Any other ideas?
Like kind of when you swap values in the right way, you have to store one as a temp. You do something like that, like store CQ as a temp and then copy it back when you're done.
Okay, but when would I do the copy?
Before you nullify the pointer to the parent.
And then what would I do after?
You put that temp value into a new node.
But why do I need to create a new node? I have a perfectly good one right here.
Can you just make C2 the parent then?
Ah, well, that's an idea. Rather than futzing around with pointers, why don't I just somehow make C2 be the parent? Then I'd have something that looks like that. In fact, I would have this picture, where C2 points to C1. Okay. Now, I'd still have to futz with pointers, of course, because I'd have to null out the pointer from P to C2. But before I do that, how do I make C2, how do I make the node P be the node C2?
The important thing is the value inside.
Exactly. So last step. There you go. The important thing is the value C2, the value stored in each node. So if I want to make this node, if I want to make this node have the value of C2, I just assign C2 to this node. That's it. We're done. I've essentially got this picture. All I have to do is nil out the node, the pointer from what used to be P to what used to be C2. Notice that I don't have to futz around with the parent now. I can just, in fact, ignore the parent. I'm just dealing with the node P and one of its two children. Notice that I only need at least one child. I can certainly have more than one child, but I need to have at least one. And also notice it doesn't make any difference in this case which child I hoist up to the parent position. I could do this way, or I could do it the other way, C1 and pointing to C2, like that. So, you just essentially, if you're dealing with a node that has leaves as children, you just copy the child's value up to the parent, doesn't make any difference which one, and then null out the parent's pointer to the copy child. That's it. You're done. That's more complicated than what we had to do here, because in addition to playing with pointers, and in fact parent pointers, we have to copy values around, but that's just an assignment. That's fast and cheap. All right, so that's the next. That was our second step. What is the final step, or the step after this?
Removing parents with children, also children.
Exactly. The general case is removing any node. And how do we deal with that? Now this is now we're essentially back to the original problem, right? This is the problem as I originally specified it. It's a little bit nicer picture here, or perhaps not nicer, but certainly more complex. But you get the point. So what do we do? Have we learned enough to solve this problem? What have we learned up to this point? What two interesting facts have we learned about deleting nodes from trees?
To delete a leaf, we can just erase the pointer to the parent.
Okay, but all right. But we've also learned something else. Can you, let's see. That's right, but what else have we learned?
That if it has a child.
No, let's stay with a leaf. Yeah. We've learned something else, too. Yes, that's true. That's true. But in terms of generalizing our experience to a more complicated example, which is what I'm trying to get you to do, what have we learned? Well, sorry, go ahead.
Leaves can become parents when you
move. Yes, that's true, but that's the other case, that we're now still interested in deleting leaves. What we found is that the easiest thing you can do is to delete a leaf. Right? Now, if you can make your problem look like deleting a leaf, you've solved your problem. Right? So that's the first thing we learned. So if we can somehow make this problem look like we're deleting a leaf, then we solved it. And furthermore, we solved it in the easiest way we can. So that's the first thing we learned. What's the second thing we learned?
That you can delete a node by copying
over. Exactly. The second thing we learned is it isn't really necessary. Well, at some point you have to... You didn't say this, but at some point you have to eventually null out a node someplace. You have to null out a pointer. But you can also do deletions by copying values. And copying values is pretty easy to do. So what we can do is we can put those two things together, these two hard-won pieces of knowledge from our previous examples, and see if we can use that to figure out how to delete any node in a tree. And it's pretty easy. Since it's the easiest thing we can do is find a leaf, we just look for a leaf. And we'll talk about how you do that in a couple of minutes. Once I find a leaf, what do I do with it? Well, I take the value of that leaf and move it up to the node I want to delete, and then I null out the pointer to the leaf. We're done. So I can take the two simple cases I had in the previous examples and combine those together to do an arbitrary removal. And notice that this covers all the possible cases, because if P is in fact L, I'm deleting a leaf, and I'm done. Although, again, you have to worry about the parent. And if P is anything above a leaf, either one, actually I haven't talked about levels yet, but if P is a parent or a grandparent or a grand-grandparent, doesn't matter, a grand to the N parent of a leaf, then I know how to solve the problem. And it's got to be one of those two things, if it's in the tree. So that's it. That's how you solve the problem. You find a leaf. And notice that, again, from the principle we discovered here, it doesn't matter which leaf you use. You can use any leaf you want, so you can pick any leaf. In this case, I just sort of jitterbug down the tree, bang into a leaf, and then we're done. Notice, though, that I have to hoist this value up to here. So I need to provide for that transfer of information, but that's relatively straightforward to do. Notice also that, in general, I have to worry about the parent of the leaf node, like we had to do when we deleted the leaf. But other than those two things, that's how you delete from a tree. Now, this is going to be the basis for all our deletion routines, but they are going to get more complicated. So does anybody have any questions about this? We can combine those together, and we get something that looks like this. I want to remove a value, and I see I forgot to pass in data, but let's assume that I've also passed in the value I'm looking for. What I've done is I've left out the delete method, the actual thing that does the deletion, which is unfortunate. So what I need to do is, if I want to delete a particular node, I have to see whether or not I have a left child. And if I do, then I'll just arbitrarily say, fine, we'll go down the left tree and do the deletion there. Otherwise, let's see if I have a right child or subtree. And if I do, then I'll go down the right subtree and look for a leaf to delete there. If I have neither left nor right, then I'm at the leaf node itself, and I can just mill out the pointer to the parent. Now, what I left out is the delete operation, which is the thing that dives down to look for a leaf. And I will have to add that. I suppose I could try doing it now, but that's probably not a good idea. So let me put this on hold, and we'll come back to it when I actually write the routine to do the deletion. All right, and those are the three operations that we are going to cover here. Putting things in, taking things out, and looking for things. How much do they cost, worst case? Let's start with the one that James already took care of for us, which is looking for things. What's the worst case execution behavior of searching for a value? Right, which is? Right, it's linear. Okay, so immediately we lose. Because we're saying, wow, you know, this is great. We're going to get log n access to operations, and we're looking at a linear operation for find. Well, maybe that's an aberration. Maybe the other operations are better. So what is the worst case behavior for add or insert or put, however you would like to think of it? Constant, right? You just slam a node in at the root and you're done. So that's a constant number of operations. That's order one. Well, that's great. That's like I said, you can't do better than that. And then finally, removing. Removing's a little tricky. What is the worst case behavior for removing a node? Well, actually, it's not that tricky. Well, yes, it is actually. Okay, justify that.
Because doesn't it want to have to find the node before it can remove it?
So right, but what node is it looking for? You're right. Oh, so that was much easier than I thought. That's right. So the last node it could look at is the node that you're looking to delete. So that's order n. So yeah, I mean, that was even simpler than what I was thinking. So yeah, you're right. I don't know if it's worth going through. No, it's not, because we have to get going. So we have linear behavior on search and remove and constant behavior on add. Well, that's really, apart from the constant behavior on add, that really stinks because we were looking for a log n information. This is not what we signed up for. We signed up for a data structure that's going to give us asymptotically better access to all the elements in our data structure and not just linear, which is not asymptotically better than a linked list. Now the question is, why? Why are we not getting logarithmic behavior? After all, we are dividing things in half, aren't we? So we should be able to get, I can draw a really nice tree, what's known as a perfectly balanced tree. But still, inserting and removing is going to be linear. Why?
It's not in order.
Well, yes, that's true, but so what? Right.
Exactly,
that's the problem. The problem is we don't know enough about the data in the tree. We cannot say anything about the data other than the node that we're standing on, and possibly the nodes that we've traversed up to the node that we're standing on. And in particular, if we're looking forward to the children, we can't make an intelligent decision about whether we should go left or right, apart from, you know, is there a child at all, which doesn't take much intelligence. So the problem is we do not have enough information to be able to intelligently navigate the tree. And that's why we have linear behavior. This is an important point. If you don't know anything, you have to be stupid. The way you get smart is you learn things. Then you can apply your knowledge to essentially take shortcuts. And shortcuts are the things that gives you better performance. So now the question becomes, and James has sort of answered that, what kind of information should we add? How can we get back what we hope to have in terms of logarithmic performance? That's the question. But we'll leave that hanging for a while, turn our attention elsewhere. What we were doing as part of the previous algorithms, in particular the searching and the deleting algorithm, was we're sort of galumphing through the tree. We're looking for a particular value in the tree, or we're looking for not only a value, but a leaf to replace that value. Those are both examples of having to traverse the tree. Those are specific to operations in the data structure itself, searching and removing, but you also might want to provide tree traversal as an operation at the interface so that the clients of the tree ADT can also galumph around the tree and look for things or operate on things in general, which leads us to the notion of providing tree traversal as an operation independent of any particular other operation like putting things in or taking things out. So a tree traversal is an organized tour through the tree's nodes. And what organized means here is essentially you want to touch every node. The assumption that we're making here, and this in general is not true, but it's a simplifying assumption which works reasonably well for us, is that we essentially want to process the data in a node only once. Okay? So we essentially, for example, I want to print out every value in the tree. So I need to galump around the tree, and every time I hit a node, I want to print that value out, but then I don't want to print it out again. Now, you could easily think of situations where you might want to do something to a value, and then you might want to do something again. Like, for example, find the largest value in a tree, and then go through and subtract that value from every other value in the tree. But you can sort of cast that as two traversals through the tree if you want. So our restriction to just touching or manipulating or processing the data once per traversal is not that restrictive, although it may in fact be inefficient. But we're not worried about that now. We've seen, with respect to binary search trees at least, and of course it extends to n-ary search trees, an example, the traversal that we performed is, well, we're going to process the data at the root by looking at it and seeing if it matches the data we're looking for. If it does, we're done. Otherwise, we're going to go down the left subtree. And if that fails, we're going to go down the right subtree. That is a traversal in service to find. We would like to provide general traversals for anybody who would like to implement operations over the tree. How can we do that? How can we think about it? Right. Because the problem here is I could have done this in a lot of different ways, right? What's an alternative way to traverse the tree to do a search? Can somebody give me an alternative way? No parallelism. You can, certainly you can, and that's what's nice about trees is because that's really easy to do. But we're not talking about that stuff, so yeah, something else.
What was the question?
Give me another way to implement search that doesn't do this, does something else, but still works. Doesn't follow this pattern of tree traversal, but it still works. We haven't defined levels yet. Just looking at what you had here, you're right. And that's actually an interesting traversal mechanism, but are we going to talk about that? I don't believe we are. If we were talking about graphs, we would talk about that, but we're not going to talk about it here. Alternative? Sorry.
Start at the leaves and work up?
Yeah, but how would you get to the leaves?
We would have to store them somewhere else.
So now we're back to finger trees again. But yeah, you're right. But we're not going to do that because we don't have that structure for our ADT. Right, we have this structure. So one thing you can do is you could look here and then look here and then look here. So you can look at the trees in reverse order. Rather than go left-right, you can go right-left. Okay. Another thing you could do is you could look here and then look here. And then look here.
How would you do that since you have to start at the root?
Well, that's a good question. All right, which one? Pick. You don't.
The top.
Okay, yeah, but which traversal are you?
The one where you go from the bottom right.
Okay, so how would I do that? Somebody write that for me. So what we want to do is we want to have a search that looks here first. And if it doesn't find it in the right subtree, it will search the left. And if it doesn't find it in the left subtree, it will search the root. Search. bool e root. Next statement. Let's just go around the room, starting with John. What's the next statement? What's the next statement I need here? Or I should say the first statement. Right, except that, what do we want to search first? Well, the first thing we want to search is the right subtree. So how do I do that? Go ahead. I'm perhaps getting ahead of myself, but go ahead. How do I search the right subtree? What are we writing here? Right. We're writing the routine that tells us how to search trees, right? So if I want to search the right subtree, there you go. Search the right subtree. Now, I've made an obvious mistake here, which we'll come back and fix up, but I want to see if I can get this done. Well, actually, we have to do something else, too. We have to say, if this succeeds, then return true. All right? Courtney Knight, next statement. Right, same thing, except replace root.right with root.left. Turn true. James Perea. Last statement. Oh, I gave it away. But last statement. Exactly. And actually, at this point, we don't need an if statement, right? Because we know it's not here, and we know it's not here, so if it's going to be anywhere, it's got to be here, so we can just say return. E dot data, no, sorry, root dot data is equal to E. Michael Cunningham, there's a big, big mistake in this code. What is it? Exactly. There should be if root is equal to nil. That's my mistake. Return false. So there you go. That's how you answer that question, right? That answers your question? Or does it? I don't know.
So you're returning...
No, we're returning root.data equals to nil. So this is a Boolean expression.
Oh,
okay. Equals.
I thought Boolean don't return true or false.
That's right. So what's...
Oh, it's returning if that's R.
No, it's returning this. Oh, you're not... This is like really bad programming. You're talking about this?
Yeah.
This is newbie programming. Man, if you write code like this, you deserve to be mercilessly flamed. This is just, and in fact, a couple of people wrote this on their first assignment. I said, nah, don't write this. Don't write code like this. This, nothing says I'm a clueless newbie like code that looks like this. Right, so you want to write code like this. And if you don't understand the difference between these two, you better learn it. Because this is just, says I am a pointless newbie, flame me. Oh, that's another thing. A number of people on the test use the phrase worst-case scenario. Don't do that again. So does this answer your question? This is how you would search this first, and then this first, and then this. Notice that this still is our definition of a tree, right? This is the base case. If root is nil, that's the empty tree. Otherwise, we have a node with two subtrees. So this, again, is a recursive definition of our tree. This is a recursive algorithm to do a search. All right? Questions about that? So here's the example. Now, so that was one way to do it, and I mentioned a couple of other ones. We can go right, root, left, and so forth and so on. And it turns out, if you think about that, there's essentially three things you do during a traversal of a tree for some purpose. Right? You execute whatever your purpose is on the root of the tree that you're at, which we'll call N for node. And then you go down and recurse on the left subchild. And then you go down and recurse on the right subchild. Right? Those are the three things you do. Now, what you can do is you can put those together in any order you want. And if you think about it, if you've taken combinatorics, which you should, you'll see that there are six different possibilities for three steps. Right? You can do node left-right, which is what we had originally started with. You can do node right-left. You can do left, node right, so forth and so on. So there are six different ways that you can traverse a tree using this approach. It turns out that three of those are fairly common. Notice that we don't have the traversal that James had mentioned, where you go level by level, assuming that we understand what levels are, which we don't, because I haven't talked about them yet. The most common traversals, the traversals you hear about in general, are what's known as in-order traversal, which is essentially you go down the left tree, then you process the node at the root, and then you go down the right tree. There is pre-order traversal, in which you process the node at the root, and then you go down the left tree, and then you go down the right tree. And then there's post-order traversal, in which you go down the left tree, go down the right tree, and then go down and process the data at the root. Notice that the ordering here refers to the time at which you process the root data. In-order means you process them in between the left and right trees. Pre-order means you process them before the left and right trees. And then post-order is you process them afterwards. In this case, I have specified the children to be always processed in left to right order. Of course, the opposite of that is you process them in, or traverse them, I suppose I should say, in right to left order, which gives you the other three. Generally speaking, people, because we have non-Semitic language, we process things from left to right. That's actually an interesting question, whether Semitic languages do traversals from right to left. I think we know the answer to that. And these are the things that we already talked about. The important point to keep in mind is that you can always do other traversals, which occasionally is useful to remember. So let's take as an example, a binary tree search, which can be implemented in order, which is the example that I had given originally. It can be implemented in pre-order, which we haven't talked about, and then we just went through the example of doing post-order. That was James's example. Which of those makes the most sense? You can certainly do any of those, right? Because they'll all work. But which one seems to make the most sense when you think about implementing them?
Pre-order.
Why is that?
Because you have a pointer to the root.
Yeah, but you have a pointer to the root no matter what your traversal is. So it's not. I don't see how that distinguishes. What else about pre-order is interesting? I will say it's a probabilistic argument. Well, it's not that complex. Do you want to take a fling at it, Michael?
Well, I was going to say, this is the fastest.
Right, but the question is, well, that's perhaps overstating the case, but let's just, all right, but why is it the fastest?
Oh, because when the value's at the root.
Exactly. The point is, if the value is at the root and you're standing at the root, it makes sense to check the root first. If you find the value, bing, you win, and you're done. On the other hand, if you do for example, post-order traversal, like we had just drawn over there, the first thing you do is you go through the left or the right subtree, and you may or you may not find it. Then you go through the left subtree, and you may or you may not find it, and then you go here, and you find it. So you've done all this useless work before you actually find it. Same thing with in-order. In-order is a little less efficient because here you go down the left subtree, then you look here and find it. Whereas if you do a pre-order, you look here immediately. If it's there, you find it immediately, and you don't traverse either of the trees. So it makes the most sense in terms of efficiency to do a pre-order traversal here. In terms of correctness, doesn't matter. Implementing traversals is pretty easy if you've understood what I talked about with respect to the N, the L, and the R. So to do a pre-order traversal, you hand me the root node, and I check to make sure I have a node there, because, again, no tree is a tree. I process the data at the root node. I compare the data value with the data value I'm looking for example, and then I go on and do a pre-order of the left and then a pre-order of the right. In-order traversal, same thing. Is there a question? In-order traversal is the same thing, except I do the processing between the left and the right, post-order, processing after the left and the right. All straightforward implementations, and they're all recursive. Again, for fun, implement these non-recursively. Summary. Trees generalize linked lists to provide uniform, efficient access to all elements. That's what we want. We want to take a linked list and somehow muddle with it so that we get uniform and efficient. By efficient, I mean sublinear access. But we do have to do a little work. We do have to do a little traversal work. On the other hand, it turns out, apparently, if you believe the analysis I just gave you, we failed because our worst case behaviors on our operations are linear, which is like a big loss because lists have the same performance, right? Linear access to values. And furthermore, it has lower implementation costs. Much simpler to traverse a list than it is to traverse a tree. Much simpler to implement a list than it is to implement a tree. So the question is, what's the deal? And we've sort of started to address that, as we discussed earlier. And then three common tree traversals are in order, pre-order, and post-order. And these are indeed common. You will frequently read descriptions of algorithms that say things like, do a pre-order traversal, do a post-order traversal, do an in-order traversal. Or prefix, postfix, and suffix, or sorry, prefix, postfix, and infix traversal. And that's it for this. Any questions about trees? No questions? All right. Sorry, James.
If you're always adding to the top, how do you like get some divisions?
That's an excellent question. And that, in fact, remember when I said that, what was it? What were we talking about? Oh, we were talking about why searching, for example, is order n. And I had this really complicated answer in my head, and you said, well, you have to touch every element, which is right, you do. My complicated answer is based on the observation you just made. If we go back and think about how you do insertion, what do? You take the tree that exists, and you slam a new root on it and create the old tree as a left subchild. All right? Well, what kind of structure is this? If you insert, for example, starting with an empty tree, and you insert 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, what kind of structure do you end up with? You end up with a linked list. That shows you two things. This is a really bad way to insert a value into a tree because even though it's fast, we end up with a linked list. But it also shows you that linked lists are trees and vice versa. Well, not quite. Certainly it's true that linked lists are trees, but trees are not linked lists. But notice this is perfectly legitimate. Not very good, but perfectly legitimate. And we'll actually deal with this question a little bit on, I guess, next Tuesday, when we go to our next topic, which will be binary search trees. Any other questions? All right, seeing no questions, have a good weekend.